This week's episode of Retronauts is brought to you by Factor.
This week in Retronauts, we talk about some games that are really fucking bad. Hello, welcome to Retronauts, the retro games podcast. It is called Retronauts, and I'm Stuart Jipp, and I'm hosting yet another, hopefully fairly rambunctious episode about a fairly rambunctious topic. And given that it's about a cartoon, I had to get the What a Cartoon guys to come and join me on it. Who else could? So I'm joined by, Retronauts regulars, of course, co-hosts, Bob Mackie and Henry Gilbert. Hello, Bob. Hello, Henry. How are you?
Hello. Hey, everybody. It's Bob Mackey, and I'm wearing my oversized Respect My Authority t-shirt I got at the county fair. And, it's stained with Kool-Aid.
And screw you guys, I'm going home. Oh, wait, I'm already there. Hey, it's Henry.
Hi. I have a feeling there's going to be quite a lot of that in this episode. It's interesting when you mentioned the county fair, because I was actually going to ask if that was a thing over there, because over here there was that period where you go to the fair and it would just be only South Park stuff wall to wall, just like posters, plushies, awful like bootleg t-shirts and things. Great fun. But yeah, South Park and South Park games, I don't think I need to put too fine a point on it that most of the South Park games in the sort of more retro era weren't exactly world-class experiences. But before we get started, I think we should do a very, very brief discussion of what South Park even is, even though everybody pretty much obviously already knows. It's an animated series created by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, based on a short film that they made. I think it was a couple of short films, actually. A couple of versions of The Spirit of Christmas / Jesus versus Santa, which bizarrely, this is a fun piece of gaming trivia. For some reason, it was on the disc for the first, 100,000 copies of Tiger Woods 99. So they had to recall it eventually, which is bizarre. I don't know how that even happens, but
it was an early viral video, and then you had to buy a PlayStation game to watch it.
Yeah,
it was something when it spread around. It's not a small thing to say that it influenced pretty much all of internet comedy from then on. Mm. Like how much it spread around, like everybody shared it, and it's why every YouTube video reviewer does a sketch where they fight Jesus and Satan at the same time, and then Santa is a character. It's because just if all they did was Spirit of Christmas, they would be some of the most influential comedians mm-hmm. of their age.
Yeah, they before that, of course, I'm not. They did things like Cannibal the Musical for Troma, I want to say, or Troma picked that up, which was quite a sort of cult movie, which I have to admit I've never seen, because I feel like I get the joke just from the title. But
It's better than that.
Yeah, yes. But it's still also a movie made by college kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a history of them for our What a Cartoon show, and it's funny, by the time South Park came out, they had kind of been doing things for about 5 years.
Yeah.
At a certain point, they had a deal with Fox to do a kids show.
Oh, wow.
So there are two pilots for a kid's show with Matt and Trey in them, full of songs and sketches and things like that. So they could have done their Fox Kids live action show before South Park if that was picked up.
It's Cannibal the Musical is essentially a very good student film. Actually, an extremely good student film that they kind of tricked their local government into partially paying for. and then Troma picked it up, and Troma was extremely lucky to get the rights to one of their movies.
Yeah.
When it started. I highly doubt Troma would exist as a company now if they didn't have all their Cannibal the Musical DVD sales.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Stone and Trey Parker, especially Trey Parker, they were marked early as these guys they're going to be something.
Yeah. The second South Park hit it big, you could walk into your video store and see Orgasmo and Cannibal the Musical right next to the South Park VHS tapes. I'm like, where did these guys come from?
Basketball was post South Park, wasn't it? I'm fairly sure it was.
See, that was another one. They got extremely by the shitty Zucker brothers.
Oh, yes.
They did some all right stuff a long time ago, but
yeah. They
got extremely lucky that Matt and Trey work with them. And that movie, like, is shit, except for the parts that are clearly Matt and Trey making up something funny on the set that's way better than the shitty...
We're talking about basketball, right?
Yeah, that's right. I have to admit, I do really quite like basketball because there is just some really world-class dumb humor in there. Like the little fella getting attacked by the Rottweiler. That's just always funny to me.
But then again, I am quite simple. I think you also have Real Big Fish covering Take on Me, which is always a classic.
I just remember the posters for basketball were so great because the first one is... It's both of them, like, this was a theatrical release, both of them, like, holding the basketballs in front of their crotches like they're two large testicles. But then when the VHS comes out, they were like, wait, we got Jenny McCarthy in this. Airbrush Jenny McCarthy in between the two of them to sell this to the horny kids out there, too.
I mean, I probably wouldn't recommend it to anyone or admit to liking it, but I guess I just have on a podcast. So, yeah, it's a bit late for that, isn't it? But South Park, of course, right out of the gate, in my experience, it was huge. Straight from Cartman Gets an Anal Probe, the first one, which I believe was the only one they stop motioned, but I'm not sure if they actually did. They might have. Because I think they've gone back and remade them all since, so I don't know if it still is stop motion or...
Yeah, that's the only episode that is still stop motion, although right. they later went back and added some scenes with computers. But the big thing about... And I am going to be repeating a lot of what I did on that What a Cartoon episode, but it was like 3 years ago.
I figured that
The reason why it was so popular is like nobody had seen anything like it before. That was one reason. But the other reason was it burned through the 6 episodes quickly. And then after that, every month there was a new special. So the anticipation to that was immense. And every time a new special aired, like Halloween, Thanksgiving, and then Christmas, their ratings increased exponentially. That was event television in 1997.
I know there was a lot of talk about the cliffhanger of season one with Cartman's mom is a dirty slut, I think it was called. Hey, I didn't name it. Yeah. In fact, I should probably lay this out there. There's probably going to be some stuff in this episode that's not like acceptable, but that was the show, so I'm doing my best to sanitize it without erasing the meaning of it.
I remember that summer of its debut. Like I watched it day one. I'm gonna play that card of like, but that's because I was a Comedy Central addicted mega nerd.
Me too. I was the one who told all of my school chums about it at the age of 15.
And man, when they were promoting the Halloween special to go, and they went on the Daily Show for it. It was like they were still getting used to being rock stars. They're like, oh, wait, everyone loves us. We're giant stars. This is amazing.
I hate to say it. I wasn't allowed to watch it. I was 10 years old. So I was going over to a friend's house who was allowed to watch it and then sneaking it at like midnight, watching it on VHS. And when you're not allowed to watch it, it is the funniest thing that has ever been made. Like every single line is crack up. Sides hurt, hilarious, because you're like, he said kid just said bitch. You know,
it was The Simpsons for a new generation of kids. It was new. It was a new form of forbidden television.
Mm-hmm. And it really played well with people who grew up with The Simpsons, and then now they were a little older, and so they're like, oh, well, we graduate into South Park. Like, Simpsons, which is our main bailiwick, The Simpsons was feeling the heat. They're like, oh, we're not the cool guys anymore. Like, we're now the old establishment thing, and we're not as rude and crude as South Park.
I mean, the impact that it had, like, I've been trying to think if there's been anything that's come out of the gate since then with that much impact. And the only thing I can think of is Rick and Morty, because, yeah, there is Family Guy, but that kind of had a couple of false starts before it got real big, I think.
Well, and I feel like Rick and Morty, not to talk about another uncomfortable thing but I did feel like Rick and Morty, it took till season 2 to really be, it, like, not in its first 6 months was it a giant thing like South Park.
Yeah,
was.
That's true, because there wasn't even, I mean, now look around, walk into any store, within 10 feet there's a Pickle Rick somewhere. But season 1 of that show, which I did enjoy, I remember there was no merch to be found, and Henry was at Comic-Con, and I was like, oh, you have to get me one of the Rick and Morty shirts. There's only one Rick and Morty t-shirt, and you have to go to Comic-Con to get it. Can you imagine a world in which there is only one Rick and Morty t-shirt? By the way, I threw that t-shirt away a long time ago.
I liked walking around with it.
A friend of mine burned his.
It's the gerbil asshole one. I liked walking around with that one back in a different time before we knew what a bad person Justin Roiland is.
Mm.
But I remember going up to their table at Comic-Con, and there is something I really prize is being early on something and being like the guy who tells people about something that's funny, and remembering going up to the table at like, oh, nobody else gives a shit about Rick and Morty at Comic-Con but me. I feel so special. And then by a year later, they basically ruled Comic-Con from then on, the Rick and Morty.
Well, I take it back then. I stand corrected. Maybe it's because of the UK delay or something that I just perceived it that way. But no, South Park's the last one I can think of that went to the moon like this. I mean, I guess Family Guy, when it came back for like season 4, it was huge, but
now, I mean, overnight successes, I can't think of a bigger one than South Park. It really did feel like within 2 months it was huge in my middle school.
Yeah, and not to go on about Family Guy, but that was a show I think Fox thought would be a huge hit initially, but it really wasn't. And that was a show where they had merchandise ready on day one.
Oh, well.
And I remember seeing it like right after the show aired, like, do I want a Brian t-shirt? I don't even know Brian.
And Seth MacFarlane is one of many people who got jobs then and big deals because they're like, they were marketed to networks as, this is the next Matt and Trey, a cheap guy who just got out of college who will make a profane cartoon for you that'll be a big hit. Seth MacFarlane has to be the most successful of those guys.
Mm.
And it's funny knowing how South Park and Family Guy would be at odds.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
That Seth MacFarlane would not have his career if not for Trey Parker and Matt Stone's success.
It's springtime, things are heating up, and the lack of horrible winter weather means it's time to move around a lot more than usual. For this season, ditch the comfort food and instead opt for nutritious, convenient meals to help you achieve all your goals during these active days. It's time for Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit that's delivered straight to your door. I've got to tell you, my first shipment is on the way, and I'm looking forward to spending less time deciding what to eat and more time doing all the activities winter has kept me from, what with its cruel precipitation and, frankly, rude temperatures. Too busy to cook this spring? With Factor, skip the trip to the grocery store and skip the chopping, the prepping, and the cleaning up too. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy, then get back outside and soak up the warmer weather. Looking for calorie conscious options this spring? Try delicious, dietitian approved calorie smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving. Factor offers delicious, flavor packed options on the menu each week to fit a variety of lifestyles, from keto to calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and protein plus. Prepared by chefs and approved by dietitians, each meal has all the ingredients you need to feel satisfied all day long while meeting your goals. With 34 plus chef-prepared, dietitian-approved weekly options, there's always something new to try. Plus, you can round out your meal and replenish your snack supply with an assortment of 45-plus add-ons, including breakfast items like egg bites, smoothies, and more. Want to cut back on takeout? Get Factor instead. Not only is Factor cheaper than takeout, but meals are ready faster than restaurant delivery in just 2 minutes. With Factor, you can rest assured you're making a sustainable choice. They offset 100% of their delivery emissions to your door, source 100% renewable electricity for their production sites and offices, and feature sustainably sourced seafood in their meals. So please head to factormeals.com/retronauts50 and use code retronauts50 to get 50% off your first box. That's code retronauts50 at factormeals.com/retronauts50 to get 50% off your first box.
It's, I mean, when I look back at the Cartoon Wars, like, what was it, 2 or 3 parts? I forget how long it was. I think it was 2. That's a really wild concept, to have a 2-part primetime cartoon about basically shitting on another cartoon. Like, that's wild stuff. And, you know, a lot of people really took that manatee ball and ran with it, you know, because there's a lot of people who really hate Family Guy. And I do wonder if, I mean, they're well within their rights to do so, but I do wonder how much of the Family Guy hate came from that show.
You know, I didn't like Family Guy to begin with. Hearing Cartman say it,
yeah,
why he didn't like it, I was like, finally, someone speaking truth, though.
Yeah, but it's Cartman. Scarlet.
Yes, yeah. That's why they get
he's the correct character you should emulate.
if South Park taught me anything, is that they love having their cake and eating it too. So yeah. Cartman says a thing they agree with, but it's Cartman, and they can say, like, well, Cartman said it, though. I don't agree with that. But no, like, Cartman is their dark side. But when he said, like, I am nothing like Family Guy, when I make a joke, it has a point, it is relevant to the stories, not just a bunch of jokes. And Seth MacFarlane's defense on that was like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. I tell jokes. Oh, I'm so awful. I try to tell jokes. Poor me.
You know, after that whole dust up, I think I've come down on the side of Family Guy more. It's like, well, they at least try to tell more than one kind of joke per episode. And that's where I fell off of South Park. I mean, some of the messages they were sending out, I didn't agree with. But I like, comedically, it was just becoming a very redundant show. And that's what happens when a show has to be produced so fast, in which a lot of episodes revolve around them finding one joke and they're just beating it to death.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And there was some humor to be found in that concept, but it just kept happening so much that I got, frankly, bored with the show by the late aughts.
It has a, I would say there's a spate, like, I don't know which seasons exactly, but probably around like 12, 13, there's just this dip that doesn't come back from for me. The current season that's airing now has been surprisingly good, I think, but. Well,
I definitely think they switched up their creative process a little bit to actually, I think it was like 5-6 years ago, they said, oh, we actually wrote the whole season before we started animating it. And it turns out that's actually a good way to do something. Like, no, I mean, the most recent stuff I watched of them, the post-COVID special two-parter.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, there were some stuff in it that I was like, oh, here's some good jokes in it. I actually liked how everybody would say, like, well, of course, now, in the future, we all do this. And they're like, yes, I know, I'm in the future, too. Like, and I like seeing the boys all aged naturally to be the age they would be if they did age from the first appearance of the series.
I did watch one of those future episodes, and I thought I was sitting down to watch a complete movie. Then I found out there were three more that were continuing the story, and I said, I don't care. I don't really care anymore.
I'll admit, I didn't watch more of it either.
For me, like, the movies that they've done, like, subsequently to the actual movie, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, which I have to say I still love. I think it's one of the funniest, like, animated movies or comedy movies I've ever seen. I don't know about that now. I've not seen it for a while, so I'm sure there's some stuff in there that might make me kind of grind my teeth now. But there's so many things from that movie that I think about them, I start giggling. So
yeah,
it was peak South Park for me. Like,
we revisited that movie on our podcast about a year ago, and we were kind of worried, like, will this still be good? And we both loved it. Mm-hmm. It's like, the songs are great. Even from the early era of the show, the comedy is, it's like the best that it was in that era. Mm. It's like, it does hold up. And I honestly think they never did another movie or another real movie because they can't top what they had there, the energy and the momentum going behind that movie.
And it's a perfect capstone to the end of original South Park popularity. Like, it wraps up so many running jokes that were in the first run of episodes, and it is them reflecting on their own success and the reaction to it that the world had. And it also is their way of saying, like, this came up in so many of the interviews I went doing the research for it, that they kept saying, like, everybody was telling them, like, well, once this comes out and makes no money at all and is a huge failure, then you guys are gone forever. And it was their way of saying, like, no, we can still be successful creative guys. This was not a fad, and it wasn't. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I agree with everything Matt and Trey have done, especially their trans stuff has made me really turn on them in that regard, for sure.
But the movie was a nice joke on a lot of their homophobic teenage fans, where they didn't know they were sitting down to watch a musical.
Yes.
That was a nice joke on them.
I mean, you mentioned their sort of stance on sort of trans issues. The thing that gets me about that is I watched one recently that I hadn't seen before, where Cartman wants a toilet just for himself, and it's to take on the whole issue. Well, I say issue, I'm doing, you can't see me doing air quotes, but it's only an issue if you're a piece of shit, to be honest. But you know what I'm talking about, the trans bathroom issue, basically. And they came down in the end on what seemed like a, I mean, it was centrist as you'd expect, you know, but it seemed down on a more sort of, no, just let people, like, go and use whatever bathroom they want. Why does this have to be such a big deal? And I thought, well, that's surprisingly acceptable. And then you look forward and you see the later stuff they've done on the issue, and it's just like, well, what happened? you know.
Well,
I mean, the most frustrating thing, and I'm going to have to admit this, they did that episode where it was about the fake trans women in sports issue, where they had Macho Man Randy Savage come in, sort of substituting for that position of a trans woman in sports. And it was so absurd that I was thinking, God, if this wasn't so vile, I would find this funny. But it's vile. It's just so propaganda. It's just propaganda at this point. And that's not what I expect from them.
It's shot like, for guys who have been writing comedy for a long time, who I respect on some level, it's very strange when some episodes feel like a Babylon Bee tweet.
Yeah, geez. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I was.
And I will say that, 20 years ago or whatever, maybe like 17, 16 years ago, when they were doing a lot of their early like anti-trans stuff, their alarmist commentary with like Mr. Garrison transitioning and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'll admit that I was not enlightened. I knew as much about trans people as comedies told me, in which the reaction was like, ew, gross, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But even at the time, I was like, what is their deal with this? Like, I thought, like, I didn't know any trans people. I didn't know anything about the issue. I was like 23 or 24, what the fuck is their problem? Like, why are they so upset about this? This is not even anything that affects them in any way, but they're just in other people's business. And I think that was what led me to fall off of South Park. Like, even as a late teen, I first got into the show thinking, like, these guys are so right about everything. You know, fuck authority, fuck the man. They're the truth tellers. And then gradually over time, when they would get to their morals, I'd be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Or, no, that's bullshit. Or, like, this is very shallow. Like, over time, I outgrew them as I got more life experience. And then I eventually learned that, like, oh, often they will tell you something they don't believe in just to make you mad.
Yeah, I mean, they are trolls. In that way, they have a very libertarian streak. I mean, it was disappointing to me, too, as, like, you know, I was a gay teen and watching their show at the start but closeted, and they do a whole episode, the first big gay Al episode, which basically is saying like, fuck homophobia.
Yeah.
And they usually were so strongly against homophobes and pro gay, but then they'd have shitty episodes about how the F slur is cool to say and it doesn't mean gay people. Or they'd have an episode about how, and of course there's all their climate change thing, which is like ridiculous. And that one they actually did. They did literally an episode apologizing to Al Gore. They were like, oh, you're right about quote unquote man, bear, pig. And it makes me think that perhaps someday they will apologize for this trans stuff too, and they'll realize they listened to a bunch of alarmist bullshit and jumped to conclusions. Mm. And I think the biggest problem for Matt and Trey, other than that they are very rich guys who are insulated from so many things, I think it is also that they assume that they are the middle of the road, normal guys, and basically the Homer quote of everybody's stupid except me. And it makes them blind to some things, and they don't listen when people tell them they're wrong.
I feel like every 5 years they sell South Park again for $300 million. Those guys must have like a combined wealth of $1 billion at this point.
Yeah, this is something else that came up in my research too, that they made fun of, and deservedly so, that Barbara Streisand is very out of touch and extremely wealthy and is trying to tell middle America what to do when it, like, they brought class into it so much. And I was like, yeah, you know what? That was fair back then. They are worth, I'd say, 5 Barbara Streisands now, I believe, their combined worth.
Well, they had the deal with Paramount Plus was like insane, wasn't it? It was like $1 billion or something for the whole thing, like 20 specials or some absurd number of episodes. I forget.
I believe it was half a billion for HBO Max and then $900 million for the Paramount Plus movies, which are just episodes of
and
the show.
Boring as hell. I have to say, I mean, the movies were just like, along with the previous like 3 seasons, it was just like, hey guys, Tegrity Weed, laugh. Laugh now. We're going to keep doing this. This is going to be like the next 10 hours. So laugh. And oh boy.
Well, it's also the Randy show now because they aged into being Randy. Like, yeah.
I mean, this will come up in the game discussion too, but it is funny. Like, if you check into like every 5 years of South Park, it's like a different show because I feel like they become obsessed with a new thing and that's all the show was about. And then once they're done with it, they move on. The show is a completely new thing. So, like, all the things that we see in these early games.
Yeah.
you will never see them again after the movie. They just write them off completely.
I mean, like, characters that are just, like, mainstays, like Bob Brady, just disappear for, like, 10 years, 12 years, come back.
Even, like, Mr. Mackey, who's a very funny character, a big part of the movie, I feel like he disappeared for a very long time.
Yeah, he very rarely shows up.
They intentionally wrote him off of the show and brought in Miss Chokes on Dick.
Right.
More like Miss Makes Me Sick.
I hate myself for laughing at that name. I hate myself. This is what bothers me. They do this incredibly puerile stuff, and it makes me laugh, even though I know it's horrible. You know,
it's
a problematic fave. Problematic fave.
No, for it is the definition of that.
You could laugh at lowbrow things. It's fine.
Yeah.
But well, I mean, the reason I love that joke is because her name is Miss Chokes on Dick, and they make up the more like Miss Makes Me Sick, and they don't jump on the obvious joke of her name. That's.
Oh, God. Sort of moving away from the show, I suppose, and staying with it, because we need to talk about the game episodes that are in the show, because they have quite a lot more than anything I can think of previously that isn't dedicated to video games. They handled video games in a way that wasn't completely wrong. Like, completely wrong and patronizing, and just Atari noises over an N64 game controller, which they're waving in the air.
They were, like, youngish guys in their late 20s starting South Park, and I feel like they were gamers, and I tried to dig this up. Internet Archive did not have this, but in PC Gamer, their January 99 issue, it's a South Park cover. Inside was an interview with Matt and Trey, the creators of the show, and I wish I could have dug it up, but I do remember them saying in that interview, like, oh man, licensed games are so shitty. We guarantee you our South Park game is not going to be about finding keys or anything like that. And then the N64 game comes out and it kind of is that.
Yeah,
but I wish I could dig that up, because they say, like, we play video games and we know the licensed games are always shitty. We don't want our games to be shitty.
Yeah. I mean, there was a quote from Game Informer when they were making Fractured But Whole where, like Matt says, the old N64 games, yeah, those weren't good. We had nothing to do with it. They just weren't good games. And then Trey adds, that's when we were told, okay, you have a hit show, so now what we do is we take your thing and we give it to a company and they make a game. And we were like, oh, cool. And we're like, the game's done, and we played it, and we're like, well, this is dog shit. So then we finally said, we're not doing that anymore. And they were like, you don't have to do anything. And we're like, no, that's the point. We don't do anything. That's when we really said, until we do the game ourselves, we're not going to do another game, and that's why it took so long for Stick of Truth to happen. Although that remark does belie the Xbox games, which are, I think they've just pretend don't exist. But we'll get to those eventually.
Yeah, that was a slow thawing, I think, those games. But it was one of those special things where it felt like, I love The Simpsons, but The Simpsons was written by people who didn't game. They weren't gamers. They were guys who, they were like the last generation of comedy writers who were like, oh, video games. I guess I played that like in college in a bar or something. The South Park guys and then on, they were all gamers for good and ill. They were gamers and they bring that to their things. And so they would have the novelty of just watching characters sit on a couch with controllers on their hands and talking to each other while playing a game. I was like, oh, this is, nobody portrays this. Finally, my life on TV of being lazy and saying bullshit while playing a video game.
Earlier in the series, when they were covering games, it wouldn't be named stuff necessarily, if my memory serves. It would be like they had the Akama Game Sphere, which was like their version of the GameCube, presumably. But then after a while, I guess they kind of just went, why are we not just saying Nintendo Wii? Because there was that episode where Cartman freezes himself so he can wait for the, I think it's for the Wii to come out. I might be wrong about this. Or maybe it's some other system.
That sounds correct. And then in other episodes, they name check like the PSP and the Sega Dreamcast.
Right. So that would be earlier than the Wii then. Yeah.
They would name them all. Yeah, the Okami Game Sphere episode, which was the first Towley episode.
Oh, God, so stupid.
That was right after, I love Towley, because he sucks.
I just love, you're the worst character ever, Towley. I know.
But like, it actually was in the run-up to the Xbox and GameCube coming out, because I remember it was one of the last ones before 9/11, because the first one after 9/11 has a joke about, like, oh no, is there a Tally ban?
Right.
And a terrible, terrible Tally joke.
Oh, gosh.
So, and also, you know, Okami GameSphere is a more of their naughty words jokes, because just like the Chin Pokemon episode, they are Trey Parker is fluent in Japanese and he puts in dirty Japanese words. Okama is a rude way to refer to a gay person.
It's similar to the slur we mentioned earlier.
I believe Chinpoko is jerking off.
I think Chinpo is penis.
Chinpo is penis, that's right, yeah.
I'd forgotten all about Chin Pokemon. That would have been a really obvious one to bring up. I've done a terrible job making this episode. I apologize. It's so obvious. Because I think the most famous gaming episode they did was the Make Love, Not Warcraft, because that was real, like, got a lot of attention at the time, because I think they used the actual sort of in-engine cuts. They made cutscenes with the engine. They were allowed to sort of show the game exactly as it was. Of course, after that, every single other adult animated series, like, did a Warcraft episode, but this was the first one, and it was pretty surprising to watch, I thought.
It really captured the phenomenon. I know The Simpsons did one a few years later, and it really just felt like they just were doing it because it was popular. No one truly understood Warcraft.
Yeah, and same with that the future one where Cartman freezes himself to get to the Nintendo Wii sooner, and he's never going to get it. Like it, I mean, that's in my darker moments or when I identify with Eric Cartman, because I was like, it was the GameCube before it, not the Wii. I was a little older then, but when it was a GameCube, I was like, if only a week would pass right now. God, I can't wait.
Now you're holding on to that week for dear life.
And they've covered it later-ish in the series, although now probably about 10 years ago, which makes me feel kind of old. They had the sort of Black Friday episodes, which led into the Stick of Truth. I think they literally ended with a commercial for the Stick of Truth. The whole three-parter was leading up to that. Which I have to say, I thought were kind of, sort of, as you mentioned, Bob, the kind of one joke hammered into the ground for three episodes long, basically. Because I think they were actually putting all their attention into the game, the Stick of Truth, at that point. That's sort of how it comes across to me. Because the Stick of Truth is quite good and funny, and the episodes around that point really weren't, to me.
I think they admitted, which is funny because then they even did a sequel, they admitted that the Stick of Truth was far more work than they thought it would be, and the work equivalent to like two or three, more than one season of the show. Yeah,
it's probably why we haven't had a new game in like 6 years. I think 2017 was the Fractured Bubble.
Yeah. What a title, my god. And the last thing I want to cover just briefly in terms of gaming episodes is they did the episode Freemium Isn't Free, which was about gambling mechanics and sort of addiction into phone games. I think very specifically, without naming it, going after Simpsons Tapped Out and things like that, where you can spend donuts to make things go faster, but there's really no actual kind of gameplay there. I mean, I recall that there's a scene where Satan appears for the first time in like 15 years of the show, and all he does is sit there and painstakingly explain how gacha mechanics work, which is funny once. You know, I don't think this is the kind of show where you can really go back to the last like 20 years of it and go, I'm going to watch a classic South Park and you're about Tiger Woods having sex with people who aren't his wife. You know, sit down and rub your hands together, here we go, a classic Tiger Woods episode. No, nobody remembers that episode.
That, now that you tell me that Tiger Wood one, it starts with their parody. That episode has the recurring joke of the newest version of the EA Tiger game that year is all them doing scenes of his divorce or his wife smashing up his car.
Yeah, if you just go on HBO Max and look at all the episode listings, it is such a time capsule. You're like, oh, that's what was happening in 2006. But if you weren't there or if you don't remember, you might need Wikipedia to refresh your memory. Like, why is this funny?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even with that, sometimes it's not. But go on. Sorry, Harry. Go on.
No, there's two other. This now has reminded me of two other video game ones. I was like, oh, yeah, those. They've done so many, but it's their Guitar Hero episode.
Yes,
at the height of Guitar Hero, like just capturing it. And that there's the Chasing the Dragon game of just you jam the heroin needle and you never catch the dragon. And same with the, and also it's more of a side story in the Wailing episode, but Cartman singing Poker Face in Rock Band, that became, I believe, it's either Guitar Hero or Rock Band. It became a download.
Yeah.
That's wild. See, they've done so much gaming stuff that I couldn't even remember all of them. I thought to myself, like, I can just remember all of these. You know, I did a little bit of sort of looking into it, but I can remember them. But no, there've been so many. I mean, thinking about what you said about going back through it like a time capsule, I've been wondering which episode is the most dated of all of them. It's got to be one of the Trump ones, surely. Because they were completely, like, surprised by Trump winning. They were just convinced he wasn't going to win. And then they basically had to redo their entire, like, half of the season, if memory serves, something like that.
That's a high up there, but there's, honestly, that is a impossible that I can,
you'd have
I'm
to look at
70 ones like these. Yeah.
You need to look at all 300 and say, like, what has not aged well? What's
I'll
aged
go
the
back
worst?
And watch all 300. No, I'm not doing that. I mean, the one that occurs to me the most is the one where they go and sit in a waiting room with internet memes and the meme people do the memes around them for like minutes on end. And if you are even like a fully grown, like 20-year-old man now, you will be like, what the hell's going on? And who are these people? What are the noises they're making? What's Chocolate Rain? Why is that panda there? What's, I don't understand.
I think the point of that episode was to be mad at the people striking, the writer strike people, because their point was there's no money in the internet, and then they immediately sell their show for the for like the first of several times to have it be online, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're billionaires because one of the many success stories of them is that they got a great deal. No one would get after them for a comedy show, for a cable show. And they got internet streaming rights because they were smart and knew, like, showing these episodes on the internet probably be worth money. And they were told, no, it's not. No, it's not. You guys can just have it. And they got crazy rich from that, and no cartoon creator after them ever would get to be that rich.
Yeah, it's very savvy, because before the age of everybody having their own streaming network, I think at this point Netflix was doing streaming, but they basically had every episode to date on southparkstudios.com. I think they also realized, like, everybody's pirating these. Let's just give them a place to watch them all. And that was very, very savvy.
Yeah, you should have reminded me of spepisodes.net, where I used to get my episodes from in tiny postage stamp style real video versions of them. My God. Well, it was better than buying the VHS tapes, which had two episodes to a tape.
We weren't going to do that.
Anime-ass tape. Unless you bought the box set, which cost £1 million.
I rewatched many an episode of South Park on Real Player. That's how from a thing I downloaded.
One of the tapes in the UK was one episode plus the documentary going down to South Park. You didn't even get two episodes. It was just like, man. They can get away with it, though. They even did these special little custom intros for the episodes, and some of them were actually quite funny while being fiercely racist in places. Although I think it was that kind of ironic racism, so it's considered fine. Nowadays,
if you're a fan of anyone from the 90s, they probably are in blackface or wearing a headdress or making their eyes squinty in some sketch somewhere. It was of the time.
I've noticed that they've stopped doing quite so much of the ridiculous, like, Chinese of Japanese accent that I want to say Matt does. I can never remember which one is which.
Oh, that's definitely Trey, because he's a big fan of doing that voice, and it's even in like one of the games when I was played the tower defense game, and I loaded it up and I was like, oh, he's doing it here too.
Yeah, it's all over that. Maybe not so much these days for obvious reasons.
Not as much. This is going to sound like I'm defending indefensible voice acting, but I will say back then they would surprise you by hiring people who actually were like native speakers of something. Mm-hmm. Like for example, in the 9/11, their first post 9/11 episode where they go to Afghanistan, they definitely went to the trouble of hiring people who could speak in at least Arabic dialect that sounded legitimate. I cannot say that it is like how a native speaker in Afghanistan would speak, but they definitely they were putting in way more work than any other show was back then when showing the evil Middle East and stuff.
think it's probably about time to move on to the games. Now, we've got a fairly decent grounding in this show and its relationship to sort of gaming culture, but it needs to be understood. And I'll read another quote because I do find it quite funny, which is back on the old South Park Studios site a while back, they would answer questions that like fans wrote in, and someone asked, since Acclaim no longer makes South Park games, who does and what type of games are we going to see in the future? And Matt replies, we currently don't have a game developer. Acclaim did such a good job of fucking up the games that now no one is really that interested in the license. And you know, it's difficult to argue that point when you play them, though. The first South Park game, or at least what I think is the first South Park game, was the 1998 Nintendo 64 cartridge South Park, which was later ported to Windows and PlayStation in 1999. It was made by Iguana Entertainment, and it's this, it's a first-person shooter where you have kind of all your classic sort of South Park characters, Stan, Carl, Cartman, Kenny, but you can unlock a bunch of other characters like Mr. Mackey, Mr. Garrison, etc., etc. Mostly season 1 and 2 kind of characters. Maybe just season 1 at this point. But every level you beat, you'd get a new password to enter in that would unlock a new multiplayer character. Or, if you were clever, you would just get the password to unlock all the characters. Enter that and save your game to a memory card, and then you would have all of them.
You know, to say this game is rushed, I'd be putting it lightly, it's always fun to look at the release dates, and I see the release date as December 21st, 1998. This was down to the wire getting this out.
Yeah.
And I played this back in the day, like a friend bought it. It was a huge mistake. He shouldn't have done this, and I think he admitted that. But I was watching the footage. I was bringing me back to that time, and it's like, oh, this is like an FPS game, but the mechanics are so arcadey, and that's just like, it's swarms of the same enemy. It's almost like a prototype for like a Left 4 Dead or something. And like, you will just only, I think like I only played the first level because I just didn't have the patience. So I only saw turkeys.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, you will only see turkeys for another good 6 levels after that.
It was a rental for me and my bros as well back in 1998. And we definitely, rental was the right amount of time for it, because we could chuckle at occasional things like, I peed in the snowball and then threw it. Or, the cow, I'm inside a cow's anus. Isn't that funny? And that'll sustain you for like a sleepover, like one sleepover of laughing. But seeing the opening on an N64 was pretty impressive for the time.
Yeah, they redid the whole thing in 3D, didn't they, with the song and everything. Yeah, and you look at it now and you're just like, Christ.
There's original voice acting. There's very short cutscenes between each level, and it's original stuff from Matt and Trey and Isaac Hayes, too.
I
gotta give compliments to Acclaim for business savvy. Like, they made some shit games, and they were doing even worse by the end of the 90s. But they saw South Park new. Like, they, for example, Acclaim made a shitload of money off being first with Mortal Kombat and Simpsons. And they see South Park, they're like, this is the next thing. We get on this right now. Don't wait for a better publisher to come in and offer him something. We'll give them their first big check, and we're getting it. And they were very lucky and smart in that way. It does not lead to good games, and in fact, poisons the well on good games. But if their job was to sell a bunch of things for maximum profit, then boy, did they succeed with that.
As you said, as you alluded to, all you do in this game, like I've seen and played through a fair amount of this, mostly as a kid, also quite recently when I was prepping for this. It controls like crap. Like the stick movement is so weird and awkward and bad and unsubtle. And all you are doing essentially is backpedaling, trying to desperately remember where the walls are, because they're quite well hidden because it's all snow everywhere. And some of it you can walk up and some you can't. The level designs have almost nothing in the way of secrets or alternate anything. It's pretty much just long corridors that have right angles in them. And occasionally you'll see like a thing from South Park, like you'll see Jimbo's store and you'll go, hey, it's Jimbo's store. I remember that from the show. But yeah, just turkey after turkey for like level after level. And all you'll hear is going over and over again for just an hour straight.
I had a headache this morning. That was not helping it.
Yeah.
Also, I want to say, like, especially looking at these early games, it's interesting to see just what a repetitive show South Park was in its first season and parts of season two, where Matt and Trey had never written a sitcom before. So much of those first shows are like all the running jokes and everyone, where it's like Stan will throw up in Wendy's face.
Yeah.
The episode will end with Kyle saying, "I learned something today." Cartman will freak out about something. Kenny will die. Chef will appear. He'll make an inappropriate analogy and then sing a song. Like, eventually they got tired of doing all of that, but they had to do it. It was like the formula for the early episodes, and that's why you see it so much here, especially the character of Chef, who disappeared for non-lore reasons, but he was like such a big guy in these early episodes.
I don't know how much of this traveled, but in the UK you couldn't get away from that fucking Chocolate Salty Balls song that they put out.
You know, you'd hear it some here, but that definitely seemed like one of those things like, oh, the novelty songs from American shows seem to get bigger in the UK than they do in America. Like, Do the Bartman was certainly around in our childhoods, but it was not number one on the charts like it was Top of the Pops in the UK.
I own 6 vinyl records, and one of them is that.
Is it the Chef Aid, the whole Chef Aid album?
Yeah, Chef Aid. Chef Chocolate Salty Balls, that. And, I don't know, some other novelty I can't even tell you.
Crazy Frog.
Yeah, why not? And the Crazy
with
Frog,
the penis.
Axel F. Yeah, with his little wang, yeah.
I keep forgetting, South Park did their own Simpsons Sing the Blues. It's so stupid.
Yeah, well, because every businessman is in their ear. They're just kids, and they say, like that quote. They all say, like, well, okay, you're successful with this demographic of kids. You have to have an album, you have to have a movie, and you have to have a video game. If you don't have those things, like, you will be committed to an asylum because you will be deemed crazy, because those are the things you have to do to make everybody richer.
Also, I think Trey Parker was like 30 when that album came out. He wasn't that naive.
No, that's true.
These guys, they were not like as young as Seth MacFarlane starting South Park. They, like we said, they had like 5 years of established trying to get work in Hollywood before South Park propelled them in their late 20s.
I wish you hadn't mentioned Simpsons Sing the Blues, because now I've got that Mr. Burns song stuck in my head. I look at all those idiots.
It's one of the best songs.
It is. It is pretty great. I'll be honest with you. I've had all those songs stuck in my head since I was a child. They're never going away anywhere. I think they had 2 South Park albums. There was a Mr. Henke Christmas Classics album as well.
The boy was there, yeah.
And that's better because it's just a bunch of funny songs.
They're not trying to fit in every music star who's like, oh, well, let's get everybody on this. Even Ike Turner. That was a mistake. When this South Park game came out, I will say I had other slight affection for it because I was an N64 freak.
Yeah.
Like, that was my main system during that time. And so any new thing on the N64 for 4-player split screen action, we had some affinity for that in my household.
And I bet you were like, see, they can do voice acting on N64.
Look at this opening. They can do it. I bet it'll look worse on PlayStation.
In the UK, for God knows what reason, the magazines were so kind to this. They loved this. They were all about this. They got all the covers. I mean, the reason is probably that they got a big bag of money. Like, I'm not going to pretend otherwise.
I don't want to cast aspersions, and I'm sure there were great people working. But if you were at the UK...
It's been such a long time.
My sense is that if you worked at an official magazine, especially in the UK, you knew what your job was, and your job was to like something. Yep. And
a scale of good to excellence.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what good's for. But especially, I would certainly assume that if it wasn't a payoff, that every magazine of UK, of Nintendo official magazine, had multiple South Park and other acclaimed game ads all over it.
Yeah.
And you don't give a bad review to that kind of game if they got all your ads.
Back at that time in particular, I mean, that time and earlier, there was very, very, like, well known that there were things we're getting paid for. That sort of came to a head with the whole Driver 3 thing, which maybe that will come up in some other episode if we ever do controversies.
I heard of the thing after Driver 3
with
a British magazine.
Oh.
I won't say on the mic.
Oh,
but
what?
Yeah, it's... American magazines did this stuff too, but in my experience, the British side was more used to it being a request or honorarium than American side. That's all I'll say.
I've been looking at EGM issues lately, like old ones from scans, because there are scans of like the first like 200 or something. And I look at it and I'm just like, why aren't all magazines like this? All it is just hype. Like, it's 200, like sometimes 400 pages of just like, oh my god, this game's coming out called Lesser the Unlikely. Look how weird and amazing it looks. Like, it's going to be so good. Look, it's Rolling Ronnie. Is that, what is rolling? What's going on? And
well, guys, I'm sorry to say this. After all this slander, we're never going to work in magazines again. It's over for us.
Say, everybody, have you seen my balls? They're big and salty and brown. If you ever need a quick pick me up, just stick my balls in your mouth. Suck on my chocolate salted balls. Put them in your mouth and suck them.
Ooh, yeah, whoopee.
Suck on my chocolate salted balls. They're packed full of goodness. High in fiber. Suck on my balls.
Now, the South Park, the next game was due to be a Game Boy Color game with the title, let me just check. South Park, in 1999, made by Acclaim Entertainment, and it didn't come out. It never hit the shelves. But you can get a ROM of it, which of course you must delete within 24 hours of downloading it. And I have played this, and it is a reasonably simplistic kind of platform and ladders game, which reminded me, and I'm going to say it, kind of reminded me of like Chucky Egg or like some old Spectrum game. So I was fully on board. I was like, hello.
just looking at the footage of this, it looks like, not obviously not as good as these games, but it's like the Lost Vikings, because presumably the four characters each have their own abilities. That's what it seemed like to me.
They didn't seem that way when I played it, but yeah.
Okay.
They may be there,
based on whoever was playing it seemed like, well, you're supposed to throw Cartman, of course.
Yeah.
And then Donkey Kong 94, because it's like very much like Donkey Kong style girders and ladders and switches and things like that.
Dare I say that I liked it better than Donkey Kong 94? No, I don't, because I didn't at all.
Good.
I was pulling out my call.
I had my pitchfork out.
Yeah, no, obviously it's complete entire dog shit compared to that, but so are most games.
So, I mean, looking at the footage of it, I did like how it was fun seeing the boys in the Game Boy Color aesthetic, which is, you know, basically trying to make an NES game in 1999. Like, there's something interesting about that look to it.
I think it reminded me a little bit of the Game Boy Bill and Ted game, which I feel like I have to bring up in almost every single podcast I do, but it really is a good game. This South Park game, however, was not as good as the Bill and Ted game, which, Retronauts fans, you can now buy on the Switch. They've released a stupid Bill and Ted collection, and you can buy that game right now on your Switch, along with the
really?
NES. Yeah, along with the NES game, which you must ignore completely and never play it. But the South Park game, I think someone, sanity prevailed, and someone looked at it and went, "Hang on a minute, this is for kids. No one's going to buy this." Because the Game Boy Color was very much considered, at least, but from my perspective, as the sort of the thing you gave your kid brother. It was like your little kid's system, with all your colorful 2D platform games and such. We hadn't had the retro renaissance yet, but the game was eventually released, repackaged, and like the graphics were redone, and it was released as Maya the Bee and Her Friends in Europe. Why are there so many Maya the Bee games? What the hell is Maya the Bee? Never mind.
Oh, you don't know. You should know more than we do.
I don't know nothing about Maya no Bee.
I only saw the anime on Nickelodeon in the late 80s.
Yeah, I was reminded of it because the very cool video channel Nick Nax, Pop Arena, did a history on Maya the Bee. I barely even watched Maya the Bee as a kid on Nickelodeon in the U.S. of that 80s version of it. But it's a German kids book that has some, I think, more popularity overseas or outside of America. And of course, watch the Pop Arena video to know about the background of the writer of Maya and the Bee. Ooh. And it's, as a man who wrote a book, I believe, in the 1920s in Germany. Mm. You know, you can make the
His other book was called Mein Kampf.
Oh, God.
No, not that far. Yes.
The only thing I know about Maya the Bee is there's a Maya the Bee game on the Game Boy Advance, which looks like Yoshi's Island, and it keeps throwing me off because I expected it to be good, but it's not. This South Park game was released in the US as The New Adventures of Mary Kate and Ashley, and I was hoping that you could explain what Mary Kate and Ashley is to me, because I do not know.
Well, wow. You see, Mary-Kate and Ashley, they were babies picked to be on a sitcom, and then they were expected to act when they started talking, and that was a big mistake. But for some reason, they became very popular after Full House with their own set of like direct-to-video movies and specials.
So they were in Full House.
Yeah, they were the, well, the twins were played one child on Full House.
Gotcha.
And they were Michelle Tanner, and yeah, then they very smartly were like, you know, we're not going to just go to a new sitcom. We're going to make direct-to-video things that we fully own and a bunch of video games that we fully own. And then, of course, the aughts were, as well, early aughts were a disgusting time of the countdown to them turning 18 on the internet.
Yeah.
A lot of bad jokes
And their little sister is WandaVision herself, which I can't watch any movie with her because I'm like, that's an Olsen twin. Where's Uncle Jesse? Where is Joey going to show up and do Bullwinkle impressions? I want to see it.
She got all of the good acting ability. Yes.
I don't get like any of the references you just made, but that's fine because they're not for me.
You guys didn't get a Full House over there?
The only thing I know about Full House is they made a thing called Fuller House, and Carly Rae Jepsen did the theme song because I love Carly. I stand.
Well,
That's the only, that is the only thing about Full House I know.
You know, Full House was short. So like South Park is currently what in its 25th, 26th season, something like that. Full House, well, the ABC was short sighted. They're like, 8 seasons. This is too expensive. Get off the air. if that show started when South Park did, it'd still be running. There would be no need for a Fuller House.
Was it like good? Was it funny?
No, absolutely not. Okay. But it was fun to watch, ironically.
They should have called it Shit House.
I agree.
We interviewed a Simpsons writer who got some of her first jobs on there, and she was being very nice and diplomatic, but there was definitely a sense of like, look, it was Full House. We weren't trying hard.
So was it the kind of sitcom like Horsin' Around from BoJack Horseman?
Horsin' Around is parodying
right.
Full House.
Okay, good, good. Now I get it. Okay. Man, I love BoJack. I wish there were games with an excuse to talk about it. South Park continued, unfortunately. They decided to make another South Park game the following year. For N64 again, Dreamcast, which was now out. This is 1999. PlayStation and Windows, and it was called South Park Chef's Love Shack, made by Acclaim Austin, and it's a sort of you don't know Jack style game show kind of thing where you have to answer quiz questions, but there are also mini games in the manner of something like Mario Party that you'll play as it goes on. And the visuals are shocking, like really faithful to the show for the time. They did not deviate from the look of the show at all. I don't think you had like any sort of horrible polygon things in the mini games. It was all just straight up South Park looking 2D. Unfortunately, from my experience, the game itself is not particularly enjoyable. Mostly because there really aren't that many questions or mini games.
That so was the problem. This was another rental, and we played the Dreamcast version.
The disc accessing is so bad on that version. Like
that
constant disc accessing.
Forever.
Yeah.
Every question would be like, okay, next question. You hear the
so
disc
bad,
turning.
Yeah.
But yeah, we rented it, and I swear it was by like the fifth game we played. We're like, wait, we heard that question before. And so we then turned it into a meta game of who can recognize the question first and hit the button before he finishes saying it.
Well, it was impressive that they got Isaac Hayes to read all the questions. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the fact that he was on the show was just by happenstance because they were developing South Park for Comedy Central and they're just like, Isaac Hayes is available. And they kind of pushed Isaac Hayes on them and they wrote him into the show. So
That's wild.
Not like they started this show with like, oh, and the chef character will be the centerpiece. He's going to tie everything together. No, they're like, take Isaac Hayes, please. He's a known quantity.
Can I bring up now briefly, because it's relevant, the way that Chef exited the show was simultaneously like sad and also incredibly funny in its pure meanness to me. To have him get like impaled on this like rock or something, and then a jaguar eats his face, and then you get a callback to the Walmart episode of Cartman being like, no, he might still be alive, and then just the massive like cartoonish shit noise as just diarrhea flies out of the corpse. It was also, just like, my God, how you cannot tell someone to fuck off any harder than that, can you? Like, it's unbelievable.
I love when they're saying like, oh no, a mountain lion, and then Cartman goes, a grizzly bear. Just the way he says, a grizzly bear. Then they start fighting each other, and then they both decide, no, we're going to rip him apart.
It's horrible.
Yeah. You could tell that they were mad, but also they were like, you know, feeling conflicted about losing somebody who was a part of the show.
Yeah. Well, there's that sad like eulogy scene at the end, which is very obviously just them speaking to Isaac Hayes or about Isaac mm-hmm. Hayes.
Blame the fruity little club that scrambled his brain.
I mean, what they've done subsequently that has put me off them, I do think putting up the Scientology story with a caption that says this is what Scientologists actually believe is genuinely quite transgressive.
They destroyed Scientology with
very, very funny to me. And then when they later did the Super Adventure Club and they did the exact same, this is what the Super Adventure Club, like they could not have made it any clearer while still legally being distinct from it. Oh man.
Well, and it's thanks to your country's government that they are uncredited in yeah. that episode on Scientology.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like John Doe, Jane Doe or something, isn't it? I forget how they did it.
That's why they have the Miscavige character in it say, I'm going to sue you in England. Because they knew that he could. Like, they could get him for libel on that.
And here we're truly free.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. And for, you know, everything else that we've done.
We're seeing that already with anytime somebody says something about J.K. Rowling, we get to see like, if they live in England, they can be forced to apologize by the barristers.
Yeah,
but not here, baby. Land of the free. This is turning me into an American asshole now.
For all of the bad messages they put out, they did. I mean, Scientology is still going strong in its own way, but they still discredited it like completely and really cut down the amount of new people that would enter that world.
Well, it just makes me think about when this show really was just, I mean, I don't like using this word because of the connotations now, but it really was edgy, like as in genuinely edgy, and like you didn't know what they were going to do, what they were going to say. Like the whole Muhammad thing as well. Like, we won't get into it because we're talking about the games, but man, I could talk about South Park a lot.
These big episodes were happening at a time the Daily Show was running, and this is when we were all very naive and we were thinking, yes, comedy is a weapon, we can take down fascism with our comedy. And then Donald Trump is elected and, amount of jokes stopped him.
We all laughed at him all in the way until November 2016. One other memory I have of Chef's Love Shack was when the questions were new to us. There was a real edge one of our friends had because he was the biggest Cure fan, and there was an entire section of questions that were about Cure.
That's really funny.
And Robert Smith.
That's really funny. Why?
Yeah.
Oh, I do like that. Why on earth would they do that?
Well, because it's the season one thing. Yeah. Robert Smith was the first guest they ever had on the show for real.
I didn't know that.
Well,
I remember they had George Clooney. Yeah, as a
George Clooney barks as a dog. Mm. Fine. But Robert Smith played himself, and
that was in season two in Mecha Streisand.
Ah, damn it! Damn, you're right. But I still their love of Robert Smith went into the Love Shack game. As well.
That's wild. I mean, I have to say. Yeah, this just doesn't seem like a very good game. But the thing is, if it actually ran well and had more questions, I can see this being all right. I can see this being a decent expression of South Park. The idea of Chef having a game show isn't a bad one. I don't know if it ever came up in any episodes or anything, because I know it opens with him doing a song that you've already heard from the series. The simultaneous loving song.
It's funny that a few, like, as soon as Mario Party came out, there were like swift responses to it, like this and Sonic Shuffle, and those just went
Sonic
nowhere.
Shuffle. God's yeah. sake. Sorry, go on.
And then Mario Party is still going strong, I guess.
Yeah. There's
18 games so far, I guess, like that.
The last one I played, Mario Party Superstars, I thought it was excellent. I don't even like Mario Party. I think it's the most annoying thing in the world, but I thought, I've got to give them props. This is real good. I guess that's how they get to that point, you know? I mean, it's not as good as Asterix Caesar's Challenge on the Archimedes and Mac, but, you know, that's for my Asterix Caesar's Challenge episode that's coming up at some point.
It's no Fortune Street.
I bought that on the Wii because someone made me and I haven't played it yet. I bet I'm going to have a time with that one.
It's a board game that can take hours that doesn't let you save.
Wow.
That's it. Yeah. Huge mistake in that game.
Sold.
Huge mistake.
Good lord. All I know is someone on Twitter basically says, Stu, you have to buy this game now. I was like, fine, it's not very expensive, I'll buy it. And it comes and I'm like, it's Mario and like Cloud or something. And like Dragon Quest Hero. What have I bought? What is this? And it appears to be some kind of Monopoly style thing.
Okay, talk about Fortune Street.
Yeah, let's talk about
that
Fortune
E3,
Street.
At that E3 where they announced it, I was the only person who would walk up to play the game when I was there. Like, it was empty. I was like, because I was the guy going like, wow, Fortune Street. I've always heard about this series, and it's finally coming there, coming here. And the person who worked for Nintendo seemed very pleased. They're like, wow, you've actually heard of this. I don't have to explain this to you. Hooray.
We got one.
We found one nerd here. Yeah.
This is what you're going to get in this true episode. There are going to be tangents. But speaking of tangents, South Park Rally in 2000. Unless we got more to say about Chef's Love Shack.
No one ever does. I love the era of people complaining about cart games, and now I wish there were more. And it's funny, we're seeing a resurgence of this because recently, within the past year on mobile devices, there's basically a Fox kart racer that has like King of the Hill and American Dad Bob's Burgers characters in there. Yeah. No Simpsons, of course, but they're making like new kart games with licensed characters in them, and I heard that one is actually pretty good for what it is.
Yeah, they've got Garfield Kart Furious Race. Which I'm
that
sure
one's
is
not good for what it is.
Take control of Garfield, Nermal, John.
It's a meme, but it's not good. People only play it as a joke.
Yeah. But there's like Nicktoons Racer 3 or something, because they keep throwing back to like putting all the old Nicktoons in there so that people like me will buy it. And then you buy it and you're like, wait a minute, this is just a reskinned Garfield Furious Racing. But kart games, South Park Rally had as good a chance of anything of being good, honestly. It came out in 2000 on Dreamcast, PlayStation, N64, Windows, made by Tantalus Interactive. And at the time, again, the N64 magazine in the UK, the official one, did like this game. It got the cover. They said, yeah, this is great. Loads of unlockable characters, loads of fun. I played it for the first time this week to research for this episode. And I have to say, I hate it. It's very, very bad. Now, it does have this system where you're driving two checkpoints rather than a straight sort of course. You know, you have a reasonably open, like, South Park, I don't know what to call it. It's not an open world, but it's a big, like, it's like Carmageddon or something, or to Twisted Metal. But you, when you race, you are going from checkpoint to checkpoint, which, of course, eventually does take you around a circuit, but if you are familiar with the tracks, you could take shortcuts and things, and that's quite interesting. However, the problem is, from what I could tell, and I did try quite extensively, I did read the manual, I did look at things to see if I figure out if I was just playing it wrong. It turns out I wasn't. If you make, like, a mistake, you can never recover. Ever. The AI will not give you a second to recover.
It's funny that people, I don't think they do it anymore, but for the longest time they complained about the rubber banding effect in Mario Kart games, in which you're always kind of about to be caught up to by the AI, but that also was working for you as well, and I don't think people really realize it until they played games like this, where it's like, oh no, the rubber band thing gave me a chance to recover.
See, that's just like how people think that Jesus wasn't with them on the beach the whole time. And they're like, no, the rubber band was there when it's only one set of prior tracks.
Exactly.
I mean, I can see why Mario Kart, I mean, I know it's not about that again, but I'm not really a fan of Mario Kart since the SNES one, because I'm just that salty about the blue shell. Mario Kart 8, I think, is the best one they've done since the Super Nintendo. Like, it's really great, but I still hate the blue shell, so no thanks. But I can see why people like it because of that rubber banding, because of that feeling that you're always in the race. Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled. I love Crash Team Racing. I think New Nitro Fueled is an excellent remake, but the fact is, if you make a mistake, you're screwed. It's not got any kind of, it's not, what's the word? It's competitive, but it's not like fun competitive. You're not, whoa, getting closer, I'm catching you up. There's none of that sense of fun. And South Park Rally kind of has the same thing, except there's a little kid saying ass. Basically. And you know, you're picking up a Terrence and Philip doll that makes you do a big fart and go flying forwards. Ah.
I think as far as obvious games to make, a kart racer was the obvious one. They'd have gotten to it anyway, but they picked up on the synergy of the respect my authority episode to know, like, oh, okay, this game, we have to make it now. This is the cover of the game here.
Yeah, Cartman on his like big wheel or whatever it was.
For as funny as it was and how much we enjoyed it back then, it was like such a catchphrase loaded show. It was like it was like giving t-shirt makers instructions every episode. And that respect my authority, I swear to God, that was like a 3-month bubble we lived in where you saw the t-shirts everywhere that I referenced up front, and you saw like little policeman Cartman stuffed animals, but then like it was just gone. They forgot about that all completely.
The most surprising thing is it's from one of the worst episodes of the series, like the chicken lover episode. I thought it was just like almost no laughs at all.
It's a weaker one.
So I'm surprised that's what got on.
No one remembers the loving of the chickens. No. They just remember the authority.
And that chicken lover guy, he's in one of the mini games of Chef's Love Shack when I was watching the playthrough. Just like, oh my God, this guy? Was he in more than one episode?
South Park Rally, really not much to say about it, because it really is just licensed tie-in drivel. Like, it doesn't feel like there's been effort put into it. It does have your four-player racing, and the thing is, on the PlayStation, not to mention the N64, you know, PS1, you've got Speed Freaks, or what was called Speed Punks in the US, I think. You've got Wrecking Crew, you've got Crash Team Racing, you've got Muppets Racing. There is no shortage of kart racing games, Micromaniacs, all that sort of thing. And
Chocobo Racing.
Yeah, Chocobo Racing, the best one. I never actually played Chocobo Racing. I have no idea if it's good or not. I'm assuming it's pretty good, yeah.
The original one is fine for that kind of game, yeah.
I wanted to try the new one, but I found out that it's got, like, Battle Pass or something, and you now can't get most of the characters. And I was like, well, why did they implement that? South Park Rally, though, no, don't play it. Not even out of curiosity. I really think it will frustrate you. You get hit by a weapon, you're going to go flying off course. Your little Kyle's going to say, like, you bastard or something, and then you will laugh, because that's very funny, obviously. But then you will be very frustrated when you now can't win the race. I think it did much the same sort of thing as the shooter, which is almost every time you achieve anything, you can unlock a new character. There are hidden items in the courses as well that you have to find to unlock other new characters, and there's quite a large roster. But the problem is, you don't really want to be any of them in the game this bad. It's not, you know, it's like The Simpsons Wrestling. You really want to play as Ned Flanders, but you really don't want to play The Simpsons Wrestling enough to unlock Ned Flanders. You guys have done the Simpsons games. You must have done the Simpsons games before on, because I know you talked about. Yeah, you interviewed someone from Bart vs. the World or Space Mutants or something. I vaguely remember.
Yeah, that was in early days on our Patreon. He worked at Acclaim before the South Park era of Acclaim. He left for Fox Interactive, but he had to admit, like, look, those games were good. When I went to Fox Interactive to try to make Simpsons games there, our plan was to actually make good ones. This is like the end of classic South Park games here in this era, and it's funny too, because the gulf between them, this is being older, 9 years is not much to me now.
No.
But the 9 years in between those two games was like, I was a fucking teen when Rally came out, and when the next game came out, I was working at my video game online job. Like, I had my real job and I was an adult. I was a big boy.
It's remarkable that the show did stay sort of, I hate using this word, but it sort of stayed on the zeitgeist for that long. I think it's sort of lost it now. I think it's a bit of a relic, but it was very current, because they did make that choice to go topical. But South Park, the next game, which you've mentioned, Double Six with South Park Digital Studios, because this is when the era when they were putting their brand very heavily on these games. It's South Park Let's Go Tower Defense Play, which is presumably a humorous reference to the English, or whatever it was called, phenomenon there. Because it's hosted more or less by the shitty, what's it called? Shitty Walk.
City Walk guy.
So you're basically being bellowed at in a, like, racist Japanese voice constantly. And the annoying thing is, it makes me think of the Human Scent iPad episode, which cracks me up, and I feel very bad laughing at it because it is horrible. But no, I have to admit, I really did enjoy this when I played it with a friend at the time. It is very much a traditional tower defense where you build walls and you build, well, turrets as swarms of South Park style enemies come at you. You've got rats, you've got, you know, the ginger kids, ha ha ha, the ginger, you know, all that sort of thing, sort of swarming you. But crucially, what makes it fun for me is, you're not just a cursor, you are one of the kids, and you throw snowballs yourself, so you can contribute to this. You are running around the maps, attacking the enemies, while your best-laid plans are also taking place. There's nothing particularly remarkable about it, but it is a well-executed tower defense game, which you could play with up to four players, and that, you know, that was a big deal for me, especially with couch co-op. But I never really heard anyone talk about this game or anyone else that I knew ever played this game. It was pretty much me and my one friend in Cambridge. But I've got fond memories of it, and I did buy it myself when I got an Xbox eventually, and now I never play it and probably never will again. So, yeah.
Yeah, this came out at a time where it felt like one out of five games on XBLA was tower defense or similar to it. And I only really liked one of these games, and it was Plants vs. Zombies, and it came out this year. So to me, that is like the end of tower defense for me. Like, that's just like, can it get better than this? Probably not.
Yeah, I loved Plants vs. Zombies a ton. I did not really touch this game. Though when it came out, I was just getting started in the games press world, and my thought was like, wow, wait, South Park has video games again now? I thought that was over. And to know that it was South Park Digital Studios, that did show me that, like, they're actually invested in this one. And I think if you're thinking from, like, a business portfolio sense, this is the right way to start. Like, just take a tried and true genre that everybody, you can just don't have to write a ton of stuff for, don't have to make a ton of assets for, and sell it as an XBLA game, which is a nice safe bet. You're not having to print a ton of copies of something. It's an easy test.
I mean, I think you can still buy this. I don't think it's been delisted. The problem is you have to have your 360 hooked up because it is not on Xbox cross, what's it called, backwards compatibility, which is, you know, not the biggest upset in the world. I would say it's probably not the most demanded game. But oddly enough, Ugly Americans game, that's on backwards compatibility. So you can play the game based on the forgotten two-season Comedy Central cartoon Ugly Americans, Apocalypse Geddon.
Is that also a tower defense game?
No, it's a really, really bad twin-stick shooter.
Weird, weird.
Yeah, we'll save talking about that for the inevitable Ugly Americans episode, which we're doing, you know, 2-3 hours about Ugly Americans.
You might need to call somebody else for that one.
You know what? I thought that show was tolerable because they got Augenblick Studios to animate it. They were the ones who did the first season of Super Jail. So the animation is very, very good for what is essentially an animated sitcom.
Yeah, well, I loved the first like episode. I was like, oh my god, this is so great. This EC Comics looking thing. And oh my god, that zombie is talking like just kind of a bro dude. That's hilarious. Zombies aren't like that, you know? Zombies don't like having sex.
What if your boss was literally the devil?
Yeah, whoa. yeah.
And she was a hot girl who wanted to like fuck
you. No, that was his daughter.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah. Come on, we're talking about Ugly Americans, Henry.
My bad.
It's an institution.
Come on, this is cultural like cashew, man. You need to be on top of this. but no, I guess everything got a game, but there was never any Moonbeam City game. May it rest in peace.
That's such a great show.
It was a show.
We're friends with the guy. It's a great show.
Oh, really?
It is actually a great show.
I liked the two or three ones that I saw. I have to admit, that was quite funny.
It should have gotten another season, but unfair.
It would have found its Moonbeam feet.
Its marketing made everybody think it was just an Archer clone, when it really isn't.
No.
I blame the marketing.
I did like, controversially, it had that Rob Lowe chap in it, didn't it? Will Forte. Is it Forte?
Will Forte, the funniest guy around.
He was great. I can't remember the name of the character he was, but he was hilarious. Chaz wasn't, I forget. I don't know. I haven't seen it in so long. I'll watch the rest of season one at some point. Anyway, South Park. You see, this is what happens. You get distracted by other adult animated cartoons, because the fact of the matter is, Acclaim got The Simpsons and they got South Park, so they kind of were nailing it at this point. And then they were like, okay, the next big thing, Alan Gregory, let's get that.
Alan Gregory RTS.
Oh, man. Yeah, really tragic show. South Park, Tenement's Revenge, 2012, a sequel to the episode. God, what is the name of that episode? The Scott Tenement Must Die.
Scott Tenement Must Die, yeah.
One of the most notorious episodes of the series, and for good reason.
As the show seemed to be losing steam, that was like an early, like, rejuvenation, I think. Like, oh man, the show can still go places you don't expect.
Oh, it's very funny. I mean, watching it now, there really aren't that many laughs, but then the ending is every single time is just outstanding.
Yes. I love hearing every member of Radiohead tell him he's like, what a loser.
What a cry, hey, but are you going to cry about? Yeah. Oh my god.
I never played this.
Oh no.
And I watched videos of it, and it seems fairly competent. But whenever I look at these games that look like this, I get depression because it looks just like every low to mid budget XBLA game.
Yeah.
That at first, when I was very poor and it was a novelty, like wow, a $10 game, and then I realized like, oh, a lot of them are just kind of like this, where there's nothing bad about it, but it's just like a fairly middling but competent way to spend your time.
It was made by Other Ocean, who also made Dark Void Zero, which was the remake of the really underappreciated because it wasn't that good, but the unknown game, Capcom game, Dark Void, the jetpack game. And the PS4 Medieval, which I thought was really, really good instantly. But this is a pretty much bog standard 4-player platform game, big widescreen, like zoom out. So you have a lot of room to maneuver as each character, but you're just, it feels European because you're constantly collecting shit. Like every platform is like festooned in these like atom things that you collect, like something out of Vector Man. Everywhere you go, every single wall is a false wall that leads to more sub-fridden stuff. So you lose the sense of like, oh, cool, I found a secret, because you just know for a fact that every single wall is going to be like that after a while. And the levels take forever if you're anything like me, because you want to collect everything. So you're just jumping around, slowly collecting these hundreds upon hundreds of atoms. Get to the end of the level, and you're like, your time was 45 minutes. I
even did like Dark Void Zero a little, but I did not give this a chance because, it just had that feel of like, it's kind of cheap. And also, like, this is 2012. I am a very busy games journalist at this point, and I'm not making as if I had been sent a free copy of it, maybe I would have given it a shot. But that's the mental space I was in 2012.
I said it was a sequel to Tenement Must Die, but it was kind of more of a, not a sequel, but the episodes 200 and 201, which incidentally are not on the DVDs in the UK. You just cannot get them on DVD.
It's because it's an incredible, it's a very complex story about why that is.
But the general premise of those episodes was to do a huge South Park sort of continuity celebrate. Characters who hadn't appeared for years, like Pip, turn up in this. And one of the final sort of, I guess, reveals is Cartman's father is actually, I want to say Scott Tenement.
Yeah.
By means of some contrivance. Because they find Scott Tenement and they do a very direct, almost shot for shot, not well, panel for panel, killing joke thing with Scott Tenement being the Joker lounging around all these baby doll pieces. But that's what this game was based on, that sort of visual, that episode. This is an extrapolation of that, although Muhammad does not turn up, you'll be pleased to hear, not even as DLC.
These are not available on HBO Max either, these ones.
They're not?
Yes.
Well, I guess I guess there's no way to see them then.
Two of five episodes not available.
I mean, Matt and Trey, like, disown that episode, too. That's
really?
Also probably why it's not there. Well,
because of the censorship.
Yes, yeah.
Because, oddly enough, out there, you can get the uncensored version of it, and it doesn't seem to be a fan-made thing. I think they swept it off the servers or something. You can hear Kyle doing his full speech in the end of 201, which is basically like, the only true power is violence. If you just threaten to hurt people, you always get what you want. And everyone's like, yeah. Which is quite a funny message, but you can kind of, I guess, see why they didn't want it broadcast. Not that I'm siding with the network.
It's a very complicated thing. Now nobody cares about drawing Muhammad anyway anymore.
The funniest thing about that is they'd shown Muhammad in the Super Best Friends episodes tons and tons of times. He was even in the opening, I think, of the series for several seasons. But Not the best game, kind of flat, kind of bland. I don't hate it, but there's no reason to play it ever again, I would say. It wasn't a million miles away from something like Bart versus the World, although it actually had okay controls, so it elevates itself above that. I would say it was better than Bart versus the World and slightly worse than Space Mutants. But then again, I'm the only person who likes Space Mutants, so
you could be, yeah. Stuart. You could be.
Well, I had it on the Master System, and I didn't have anything else, so I kind of fell in love with it.
So you were being gaslit.
I pretty much was gaslit by Bart versus the Space Mutants. I'm like, no, guys, it's really cool. If you blow the whistle, this old guy comes out and throws money at you. That's awesome. Anyway,
I had that same argument with a British person about them saying it was good, and I was like, I had to admit to them that, like, I'm sure the Master System version was better than the NES version, but that is not of high bar.
I mean, all they need to do to make that game good is, I mean, make it so that you can run and jump without having to spray your gas that you can of aerosol all the way down, because there are only two buttons. You'd think they'd do that on the Mega Drive version, which has three buttons, but no, they just only use two of the buttons. They're idiots. I'll rant about Space Mutants on some other episode, because we need to get to the latest and, I guess, kind of inarguably best South Park games. 2 years after South Park Tenement's Revenge, we get the first, well, not, I don't want to say AAA, but the first big, like, boxed South Park game in a while, which is South Park The Stick of Truth in 2014, made by Obsidian and South Park Digital Studios, released on Windows, PS3, and Xbox 360, and later as a giveaway with the Fractured But Whole, and later sold separately PS4, Xbox One, and the Switch. Now what you've got here, Matt and Trey were much, much more involved in, very closely involved in fact, to the detriment of the show, is an RPG with more traditional turn-based two-character combat and huge fidelity. Like, the whole thing does look like an episode of South Park at all times, pretty much. If there wasn't for, like, the HUD and such, you could forgive and be forgiven and think you were watching an episode. But what did you make of this one? Did you play this when it dropped?
You know, I will say that I want to say this is a AAA game, because it takes a lot of work to make it look, quote-unquote, crappy. By that, I mean, it looks like a South Park episode. And they're also paying the show's billionaire writers to do voices and write all the dialogue. So I feel even though it doesn't look as flashy as, like, God of War Ragnarok, the amount of work is still being put into it.
Yeah, I'll concede that's true. Yeah.
And it was marketed like a AAA game with that much money. Like, this is another one that I saw from the other side of the Games Press too, and that's why, like, I got to see it first as a THQ game, and then THQ died.
Oh my god, yeah.
And it became a Ubisoft game, and it had to be marketed by both of them. And THQ, man, if they could have just got this game out a little sooner, but that's what you get for working with Obsidian, I'd say. But if they could have got it out a little sooner, it might have saved the company. Who knows?
Hey, Obsidian, you may have to wait for their games, but they're very good.
Well, that's THQ true. Have been reborn now, like a cockroach.
Yeah, actually, they're more powerful than ever. Yeah. They own Tolkien now.
They've been embraced?
Yeah, the Embracer Group is THQ, and they own Tolkien, yes. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, no. Among many other things. I mean,
not the South Park character Tolkien, the actual, okay.
Everything of Lord of the Rings is owned by the Tolkien estate, sold it to the Embracer Group, which also owns Nordic Games and owns THQ, and that's why it's THQ.
Oh,
Nordic.
Yeah, Nordic Games. They're the guys who advertise on pedophile websites, aren't they? Good stuff. Yeah.
Well, you know, soon we'll all be speaking Swedish, so let's not laugh too early.
Let's not think about that too hard, because look, they made a new SpongeBob game. Way.
But Stick of Truth, it was the first time where I was like, wow, this actually feels like it's really the show. And I'm like playing the show. Yeah. And they were saying all the right things in interviews too. Like, they were saying, like, oh, well, we love Paper Mario and the Super Mario RPG and Earthbound. Like, they specifically shouted out Earthbound as, like, Trey Parker's like, I loved Earthbound, and this story of four kids who fight against aliens, like, you can see that in the first episode of South Park. He was making direct connections. And I also have a funny story about, I went to the, I believe it was Comic-Con 2013 panel for this game, or 2014, one of those two, and they're presenting the game. First off, it's funny because I got the sense that the Matt and Trey were having to face their fans in the Q&A part, and they did not like it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They were kind of, like, guys came up and like, you swore my whole life of and all my views, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. You should don't do that. Don't do that. Or somebody would say, I loved all those great old South Park games. I'm so glad there's another one. They'd say, like, those are shit. Those weren't good games. And lastly, I did think it was very funny that they were partnered with Greg Miller to be the host of the panel. And after Greg Miller introduced them, they ignored Greg Miller the entire rest of the panel and did not speak to them and hosted the panel themselves.
It seems like he is the kind of like smiling corporate presence they would despise.
Yes.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, like, it's funny. I didn't play these games and they do seem interesting to me. But again, like the South Park, the mentality kind of bristles against me, and those guys need to learn a few things. But it's funny, like, Ubisoft is like the most toothless, gutless publisher in the world. Even if they make a game about a subject, yeah. There you go. Even if they make a game about a subject, they're like, we think the players should decide what to think. Even if it's about like police violence or something, they're completely gutless. Yeah. But it's funny to be at a Ubisoft appointment and having, you know, the nice PR person who are doing their jobs are like, okay, make your character. Now go up to the toilet. And there's like a nice Ubisoft PR person teaching me how to use the control button to spread a child's ass cheeks open so shit can fall out of it. So that's what's happening at these video game points. Like, okay, now hit the L button. Okay, now the butt cheeks are open. Now you can drop a poop in there. It's just it's funny that I always had to be having to be walked through this, but it's just like, this is not like my Assassin's Creed appointments at all. But I like that Matt and Trey put this offensive stuff in their games, and then like it has to be brought down to the corporate level to like instruct games journalists, like, now do this offensive thing.
And they have to do it, like, because they actually do hold all the cards. Like, it's their studio, and if you want to make a South Park game, you gotta please these guys. I mean, from a journalist side of things, it's funny to see the publisher side, who almost every single other time tells creatives, eat shit, we're doing this, that it had to be the other way around, that PR actually had to listen to the creatives on something and let it I mean, wasn't it hilarious when Matt and Trey were like, hey, we're going to do we'll do a section of the E3 press conference for Ubisoft. And they destroyed the whole show because they did not go on script. They did not go on time. They're like, and they were making fun of the presentation style of the people that preceded them.
And that was the year where like the president was like, I will tell you about my Assassin's Creed movie I am making.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Dear.
Good old Eves. Good old Eves.
Sorry, I got sad thinking about Ubisoft. Oh, I mean, it's weird that they make a game like Assassin's Creed, and that has the word ass in it twice, and it still doesn't have any shitting. It's just really disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Bring shitting to the series.
In another world, there's a huge outcry on Twitter because a games journalist wasn't able to make a child take a shit. Like, you can't even do that. My word.
Yeah, I respect these games because Ubisoft just, like, they're not making this, of course. They're publishing it. But I feel like they have an identity, and all of their games are kind of the same. But this, they were allowed, they didn't make this an open world Ubisoft game. They're allowed to make it their own thing. And there are so few Ubisoft games these days that are allowed to break free from that identity. So it's refreshing to see that this was even possible.
The bit with, I mean, too, like, Ubisoft didn't buy this South Park game. They bought a game that was already greenlit, and they continued it. Like, I absolutely think South Park, who knows, they might have even actually pitched it to Ubisoft at one point, and Ubisoft goes like, nah, that's not really what we want to do. Yeah, it's single player only, a turn-based RPG.
Do you climb any towers in this game? It's a stand, climb a tower? Yeah.
Where's your season pass plan? They did end up with a season pass plan, actually.
That was in the second one, wasn't it? Because the first one, I thought there was only just a little bit of DLC, but
In the second one, there's a bus stop that actually is just your DLC bus stop. Yes.
I heard that the DLC for that was pretty good, but I guess we'll get to that. I mean, the stick of truth, I haven't finished, I have to admit. I've been playing it for now about 9 years, on and off. I will occasionally dip into it because, with the best will in the world, all the fights are the same. Once you reach a certain point, you will never lose a fight, and they're all the same. Mm-hmm. The main obstacle I ran into is when the game teaches you how to use the fart magic, the controls are completely opaque, and like make no sense, and I would get stuck at them for like 30 minutes trying to do this stupid tutorial that doesn't even relate to how you do them in the actual fights.
I did like that they put an abortion clinic as one of the main areas in the game, and that then had a bunch of problems internationally, even being sold.
Yeah, the European console version, there's big parts of the game cut out. The
Australia too, I believe.
Yeah. I remember because the image that comes up is like, I don't remember what it is. It's some European image of some sort. It's just like, sorry, Europe, you don't get to play this part. So I had it on PC, so I did get to play it. Yay, lucky me, I get to perform an abortion on a child in a game.
Again, we're truly free.
Yeah.
Free to consume, the only freedom that matters in America.
They'll sell us anything.
After 3 years, the game was followed by one of... I mean, I think this is just a hell of a title. The South Park, The Fractured Butthole. It's so good. I'm just in awe of that. It was 2017. That was all the usual systems. Windows, PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. And rather than continuing from the fantasy theme of the first game, they were using... Now, this is what it's called, so please do not get cross with me. The coon, as they called it, where Cartman would dress up as a raccoon and run around saying a racial slur hilariously over and over and over again because they could somehow get away with that.
Yep.
Man.
Yeah.
Did anyone find those Coon episodes funny? Because I thought they were just interminably unfunny. Like,
it felt like they were all just an excuse to say an antiquated racial slur. And it was like shockingly funny to me to see that character on the front of a Ubisoft box. It's like the racial slur game.
Yes.
It has another title, but that's kind of the point, is to say that that word a lot.
Over and over and over again in the game.
This is more of a taking a run at the sort of MCU kind of parody, I would say. Is that fair to say, I think, for this one?
Yeah, so this one actually I played to completion. This was a pandemic game for me. Which isn't over, but I should call it a lockdown game.
No, I ended it. It's okay.
But
oh, nice one. Thanks for that, bud.
Yeah. Had some time.
I wanted to play it for all the Marvel stuff in it, which was funny. I did like them. They were making fun of like Phase 3 in the entire plan. It was all just about Cartman wanted to have a successful superhero team so he could sell all the different phases of superheroes to it. And I also like that the game starts with them saying, like, no, it's not that. We're not playing that anymore. We're not playing fantasy anymore. We're playing superheroes now. And they have some good stuff with the cops, like anti-cop stuff. But then the joke in the end of it, of course, has to be slightly centrist as well. But
is this the game where at the beginning, for hard mode, you just make your skin incrementally darker?
Difficulty is measured by the darkness of your skin. Yes,
that's an okay-ish like swipe. But it doesn't really amount to anything, does it? Like,
and also, they respect gender pronouns to such an absurd, to such a high degree to be absurd, and I feel it is the joke.
Right,
but,
I see.
Like, characters will ask you, like Mr. Mackey will ask you, you know, what do you identify as? Oh, that's great. We have a lot of cis people here, that whatever.
Yeah, I mean, knowing who they are, what they believe, I feel like the joke is they're being sarcastic. Like, could you believe if anyone cared this much? Wouldn't that be a silly world?
Yeah.
But and also, I did like doing the hunt for the yaoi images in the game. But then again, I was still like,
the tweaking crazy,
right, these
that?
Are 10-year-old boys drawn making out with each other. This is weird.
Again, investigate Ubisoft.
Yes.
Yeah. They're making me spread a child's butt open? What's happening at that place?
Well, they did an episode, Tweak and Craig, which was it was sort of seen as embracing that whole kind of weird side of the fandom. I don't mean weird like gay weird, I mean weird like small children weird, you know.
Yes,
I just want to make that clear because I don't want to come off wrong here. I feel like I've already done that, so I apologize, but
it's weird to step away from the source material. You know, we were so inundated with it as kids and teenagers, where I'm watching the Chef's Love Shack video, and the final round is like a lightning round, and you have to answer questions as this probe approaches Cartman's butthole. And if you fail, it starts drilling into his ass. So then I was like, oh, the whole first episode was about a child's ass being violated.
Yes. When you put it like that, yeah.
I guess it's
this
just...
I dare say this humor is inappropriate.
Yeah. I guess it's just the way that perception has changed around stuff like that, around child's anuses.
Yeah,
let's not dig into that.
In 1997, you could launch a series based on that joke. In 2023, I think your building would be burned to the ground by internet weirdos.
Yeah, God, yeah. I mean, it's kind of wild. I mean, and again, some of the stuff that South Park's got away with just still kind of blows my mind. Honestly, I don't know how they do it, but yeah. I mean, the Fractured But Whole, I know they changed up the combat to be a bit, what was it, like a sort of a lane-based kind of, not quite so,
yes,
not so simplistic.
It was a lot like Battle Network, actually.
Oh,
except
really?
in turn-based, yeah.
Oh,
but no, I guess Battle Network's kind of turn-based,
too. It's turn-based,
too.
Yeah. I think you have like a limited time to act, and then it's the enemy's turn, I think, maybe.
Yeah, it's it has a lot of good stuff in it, I have to say. It was fun to play. I played it to completion. And then I'd say... one out of every five jokes would make me go like, ooh, I'm embarrassed. My husband is watching me play this right now.
I mean, that's the South Park experience now, isn't it? Like, I guess one in three episodes, you're just going to go, oh, for Christ's sake.
And speaking of them bringing back old characters to powerful effect, I won't spoil the end of the game, but they bring back the Marlon Brando character from the first season who makes genetic clones with acids.
Oh, Mephisto.
They bring back Mephisto for the finale of the game. Like, his lab is, as I recall, the final level of it. Yeah,
that's cool. So. I mean, he was in 200 and 201, but that was a long time even before this.
It's, you know, they've given it away. Like all Ubisoft games that are more than a year old, it's basically $0. It's always on sale. So if you're looking for a good... if you do like Nintendo kitty RPGs like Paper Mario, you actually do get a lot of that in Fractured Butthole.
Yeah. If you like Nintendo kitty RPGs like Paper Mario, may I recommend Bug Fables? And maybe not South Park.
I've heard Bug Fables is very good.
It is. It is remarkably good. And it doesn't have any child's anuses being drilled by anything.
Thank God. Yeah, there's now a bunch of Paper Mario likes, and Bug Fables is one of them. There's another one that recently came out, and I forget the name, but people are making... I love when people start making games when Nintendo just stops.
And that's the last South Park game, apart from the phone game Phone Destroyer, which I have not played and never will. I assume it's just one of the freemium games they made fun of in the episode anyway, or a card game or something. I don't know.
I'm shocked that Ubisoft hasn't greenlit a third South Park game. I would have figured Butthole made some money. I would have figured it did.
Maybe they are working on it, and it's just not been announced yet. They are only doing six episodes per season now, so maybe they are working on it.
Matt and Trey are very busy guys, so it also could just be they're like, we literally can't, we don't have the time to make a third video game.
And they're also aging guys who are in their 50s now.
They're doing six episodes per season, but they're also doing the movies, which I presume take up the time that the other two episodes would have.
And they're basically sold as episodes anyway.
Yes.
And on top of that, right now they're working on rebuilding the real life Casa Bonita in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, yeah. The most recent episode was making fun of them for doing that. I think they were mocking themselves for being so just sitting back and just not knowing what the hell they were doing, basically. It's like Butters is trying to run this ice cream parlor while Cartman is just like not going in and just like being Cartman. It was surprising. This season has been surprisingly good, honestly. But that sort of brings us to the end of South Park Games. I guess it's not quite so bad as I thought. It really is just a very poor first few years of real lame licensed crappy games. Like, I mean, would you say that of the sort of adult animation stuff, they're the only ones who've ever put out any games that could reasonably be described as good? Or do you think there are any good... there's Hit and Run, isn't there? Simpsons Hit and Run.
But you know, Stuart... And there's always like one rare good game from licensed properties. I want to say we did a Beavis and Butthead Games episode last year.
Yes, I heard that. It was great.
Virtual Stupidity is up there with the LucasArts Adventure games in terms of quality, but that is an outlier. And I think the other Beavis and Butthead adventure game, Do You, is a fine, like almost Telltale-style adventure game. But those are outliers, I think. But I do think they made one really good Beavis and Butthead game with that Virtual Stupidity adventure game.
Good,
And I'd also say if you think there's any others, look up that Family Guy game and know that there aren't.
Game sucks, man. So bad. I bought that. I was well excited because I loved Family Guy. I still kind of do love Family Guy for all my sins, and I'm really sorry that I love Family Guy. I'm really ashamed of it.
Hey, look, I've lined up on Family Guy too. It's fine.
I just like it's just gags. I didn't expect any emotion from it or any, like, you know. Plus, they've also kind of stopped being horrible about, like, gay people and trans people. they've moved on from it. But
Quagmire's been reformed.
Yeah, now they've made Quagmire into not a rapist, except when they want, except sometimes. No, when I say that, as if that's what they should be praised for. Yes, they used to be absolutely vile about trans people, but now they're not quite so bad. 5 stars. My word, no. Yeah, I would put South Park up there. I mean, better than the Ugly Americans game, better than any imaginary Brickleberry game or something. There's an alternate world where Brickleberry gets like 10 games.
What about the Border Town game?
Oh, Jesus. Oh man, I just want to keep doing this and keep naming shows, but I'm not going to do it. The 3 South
Stressed
game.
Eric.
Yeah, the Stressed Eric. Oh man, I think there actually was a Stressed Eric game as well.
You know, also, Duckman Adventure game, very good, but they couldn't afford Jason Alexander.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's going to bring the whole thing down. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and there was the Aqua Teen joke game that was the, like, it was golf.
Oh, RC Pro Golf. I finished that. It was terrible. Part of me wondered if it was actually terrible on purpose, because that was the kind of thing that they would do.
I believe that. Well, I also think they would make a cheap game that just sucks, and then they'd be like, it was a joke. That's a joke.
The main thing I liked,
you bought it?
I bought that for like real cheap on sale for like maybe like a fiver or something. And the best thing about it is it has the Broodwitch episode in it. You can just watch it from the menu. And the Broodwitch episode is really funny. So I would just watch the Broodwitch over
and
over again.
You know, the Harvey Birdman game wasn't bad.
The Phoenix Wright title one.
And by that, it's like, it's the length of half of a Phoenix Wright first chapter. It's like a 2-hour game, but it's very, very faithful.
There was just listening to them now, but it was a Daria game as well. Daria's Inferno. I'm sure you know about that one as well.
I heard it's very bad and produced in very limited quantity, so I've actually never played it.
Weirdly enough, I do own a copy of that, like a legit copy, and I picked it up from a charity shop, a thrift store or something, and I'm wondering if I should maybe look on eBay and see if it's worth infinity monies. But that's
it. Wait for that Daria reboot, you know.
That's coming, isn't it? Yeah.
It's been in the works for like 7 years.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I think that's definitely coming out along with the Clone High, although that's actually dropped, hasn't it? Some of that's actually been leaked.
It'll be out in May. But as far as like most successful at being of having video games of adult animation, it is South Park, I would say. Yeah. Like they
Not
actually
Dilbert. With the young Dilbert and Dilbert's desktop games.
South Park had 2 real video games that I would call like actual, like, oh, these are 8 out of 10s, or 7 maybe on Stick of Truth. But and then Tower Defense and Tenement's Revenge are like, hey, this is you don't have to be ashamed of those.
I'm sure they didn't cost very much for the consumer. I'm sure they were like 800 points, 800 Microsoft points, right?
Oh, the points. Yeah. Right.
But no, thank you very much for coming on and yammering about South Park and all sorts of other things with me. And where can Retronauts listeners, who I'm sure have no idea, where can they find you, Bob?
Well, they can find me on Twitter as @BobServo. And of course, I am part of the Talking Simpsons Network of podcasts. You can find those wherever you find podcasts, or go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. If you go there, you get advanced access to episodes, but also access to our vast catalog of miniseries episodes, over 150 to date. We've covered things like Mission Hill, The Critic, and Batman the Animated Series. And if you're on that $5 level at our Patreon, you also get monthly access to new episodes of Talking of the Hill and Talking Futurama, our King of the Hill and Futurama recap series. And as soon as you sign up, you get access to everything we've been doing for almost 6 whole years with Patreon.
That's so, a lot of stuff. Yeah, I can vouch for that.
A lot.
How far through King of the Hill are you?
We have just started season 3, and it is one of the best seasons.
It's
having a lot of fun.
What a great show that is for like the first 6 years, though, man.
Yes.
And Henry, where can our beloved listeners find you on the internet?
Yes, I'm at HENEREYG. And yeah, backing up what Bob said, Talking Simpsons, What a Cartoon Podcast. And if you go to the premium level there, which is $10 a month, you get to hear our What a Cartoon movie podcast. And if you liked hearing all this stuff about South Park, we have a over 6 hour South Park, the movie, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut podcast. We get into every bit of history. If you want to know why Conan O'Brien doesn't voice Conan O'Brien in that, or why they're so mean to Brooke Shields in that scene, I have the clips and we play them and go through it. So you'll learn a lot of trivia.
That Brooke Shields bit with Terrence just looking at her with his stupid Canada, like that Canada face that they do before he just slaps her in the face is so funny. I feel bad laughing at it, but it is so funny. That's got to be a deep dive at 6 hours. Cause I remember listening to your Goofy movie deep dive. That's one of my favorite Disney's, and I loved that. So yeah,
oh thanks.
I can vouch for all those. I kind of come on and off and listen to everything, and then go back on again, and I keep forgetting. I should really do that. But as for Retronauts itself, we have a $5 tier, which lets you get early access to every Monday episode. You get a week early, so you get to be the cool kids and know exactly what everyone's talking about. And then the next week, when everyone's like, "Oh my god, did you hear that episode studied about Dizzy?" And you're like, "I heard that episode studied about Dizzy last week. Bullshit, that was old news. I'm already listening to the next one, which is Stu talking about Giddy." But also for $5, you get access to Diamond Fight's tremendous This Week in Retro columns, which are also mini podcasts that they record. And you'll also get This Month in Retronauts, which is a new community podcast, which so far is about me getting like really angry about something for some reason and ranting about it and causing a mini breakdown on the Discord, which you'll also get access to. So you can witness me having my mini breakdowns every month. Lots of fun for the whole family. And you'll also get two exclusive episodes every month from Retronauts, completely exclusive to Patreons, and they're great episodes too. We're not just lumbering you with like Bubsy. This is good stuff, you know. You're gonna want to be tuning in. One of them this month was Super Metroid. You want to hear us talking about Super Metroid? That's like a solid 8.5 out of 10, if not more. But yeah, that's Retronauts, and thank you very, very much for listening. I guess we should all round off with some kind of South Park noise. Does that sound appealing to everyone?
Okay, well, I'll have my startup noise for my PC back then. Beefcake!
Oh my god, that takes me back.
I'll say, yeah, I want cheesy poofs.
Nice. See, this is the thing. I had all of the sounds that you guys are saying assigned to different sounds on my computer. So I will do the beginning of the Cartman's a Bitch song, and I will say, I can't do the Cartman voice because my voice has been destroyed. But thank you very much for listening, and I hope you have a fantastic day.